in the talk with you this afternoon, I'd like to explore one of the themes of our Zoom retreat together, namely the freedom of being. I mentioned a couple of hours ago, just before the guided meditation, that on the mat, my front door, some political force-sided end lockdowns, save our freedoms, etc. So I can't pass by without making a short reference to this there. And the name of this political organization is called Freedom Alliance. I thought to myself, well, this is only a year old. I'm also an advocate of a member of the Freedom Alliance. It's called the Sangha. Anyway, so this is to end the lockdowns, and then I won't go on about this, I promise. And then the group, there's a group of people, they're standing for the local government, and their strong campaign is to stop any lockdowns whatsoever, so that everything can return back to normal. So the four pages are devoted to this, and you'll see on the cover here a few people. I can see Emma there, and I know around half of them in Totnes. And what? So just read you the first two paragraphs, and a little bit for this, because a little bit of the theme of the day is around views and opinions, and how easily we can hold and cling to them. And as we know, there are certain areas of life, politics being high up on the list there, religion pretty close to it with it as well, and many other aspects, and of holding and clinging to views and opinions. I do not say the Freedom Alliance is doing that, but I just want to read to you. Freedom Alliance is the only true... Already, you see, anyway, Freedom Alliance is the only true freedom party that is completely anti-lockdown. As a party, the Freedom Alliance believes lockdown and mandatory restrictions must be stopped. And here we go, this is a great sentence. We stand for absolute freedom of choice, and that choice must be informed. I love it. And so, absolute freedom of choice. This is rather ambitious. So, though over a cup of tea I read this, and actually there are some points which I do find myself a little sympathetic towards, but absolute freedom of choice. Please explain to me, what freedom of choice did I have to be born? What freedom of choice did I have to be male? What freedom of choice to have parents who came to me? What freedom of choice did I have to have a father who I met for precisely less than five minutes on a railway station in 1945 after the war? What freedom of choice did I have to go to the school I went to, where I live? Absolute freedom of choice? Well, what, etc. What absolute freedom of choice when a lovely partner decides, thank you, Christopher, you're never around, goodbye, etc. So, a little questionable about the freedom of choice. What freedom of choice was there for people who got sick? What freedom of choice for people who really desperately needed health treatment, major operations, but they were put off in this country because of the scale of the epidemic and the tragedy that went on with it, etc. So this idea of absolute freedom of choice is very questionable, and therefore part of our practice and exploration is knowing and observing the mindfulness of the views that you and I might share, and recognize areas within that in which we might say there is the potential for making a choice, to understand what the choices may be, what the consequences and the outcome may be, and have we, in our reflections, that's the skillful use of thought, given consideration to the three important aspects with the view. One is the intention behind the view, because the view doesn't come without intention. The second, if the view is important to us, and that view is important enough to us that we wish to offer it, share it, promote it, like Freedom Alliance and others, and also what may be the outcome, the consequence of that. So a view doesn't stand independent. It doesn't have its own self-existence. It is dependently arising on many factors. We have the capacity to look at the view that arises in our mind, in our mindfulness, in our meditations, in our daily life. And if the view does have importance to us, then intention, action, and outcome are a real consideration to the relationship to the view. Plenty of times, I'm sure for you and for me as well. I listen to a radio program, I read a book, I have a conversation, and in the midst and the middle of it, before or after, some opinions may arise. And they are just part of the mental movement. There's not a lot of investment or substance there. And so I just regard them like the leaves in the tree, just blowing in the wind. Some opinions here, favorable, unfavorable, approving, disapproving, liking, disliking. And I endeavor not to take them too seriously, recognize that the mind is just generating those there, and not to make a big fuss about them. All part of the inner world that we live in. Image, views, and opinions just travel through consciousness, coming and going as they do. However, there are times, you and I will well know, when the view arises and there is some strength to the view, some, we might say, some substance. We just heard a little while ago as one person was sharing. And that view is always to recognize the view, but as mentioned, to see what's around it. If we can, what supports it. And the first primary question, is it ethical? That there is no wish nor intention to abuse, harm, exploit. There's no wish or intention to feed one's ego, build oneself up into great self-importance, nor the other, which is to put oneself down, to rubbish oneself. That itself takes some mindfulness and calmness and clarity to catch early. Am I engaged in building myself up and putting myself down? And if we fall into that trap, let's say building ourselves up, we might think we are self-important. We've forgotten what humility is all about, and the difficulty for those who successfully build themselves up, successfully, quote unquote, is there is acute vulnerability. She or he or we may be completely convinced we are superior or better, or no more, more advanced, or whatever it might be, but the building of oneself up makes us extraordinarily vulnerable to others who have a very different opinion of us. And she, he, they will surely find the weak spot. So we've made all this effort to build ourselves up, to be on top of the pile, as we say. And then another points a few home truths out to us. And all of this carefully cultivated image of self-worth suddenly crashes. That's the vulnerability of building oneself up. And we are constantly encouraged to do that. And the other, this is the view wrapped around the self, is of course the opposite, which is putting ourselves down. And our practice is not being in this kind of constant effort in our life, building ourselves up, being put down, building ourselves up, being put down there, but to see and experience another way of being while being unusually and exceptionally mindful of this human tendency around the self. There are far more important things in life than building ourselves up and putting ourselves down. It's probably at the lower end of what's significant. And the consequences that take place personally, family, social life, environmental life, national life, much of it is psychological. So we're in a period of this in this government at the moment, kind of politics of England first, Britain first. It's all building up. It will crash. It will crash. Tragic story. So our exploration is, dare I say, a freedom alliance of a completely different order to what's in this paper. Even though I am not a supporter of the methodology which has been used. I think there are other ones around which handle this situation. Anyway, that's another story. So in our view, as mentioned a little earlier on, and just to give the reminder here, there is the view about something. And let us say the view you have, whatever it is about, feels important to you. And we have a sense that we have no wish nor need to change our view. So someone like me, smoking example, and a view which stays steady of the power and the importance of non-violence. I have a view of the destructiveness of the present political economic system, and it has to fundamentally change. That's the view. Have a view of the power of empathy, the importance of the interconnectedness of all beings, which matters far, far more than the policies of the nation state. It's a view. So the views are there, and I cannot see any reason in my life to change these kinds of view. A view of the potential of a human being to have profound realizations, to discover an enormous amount with our heart, with our mind, with our being, to really liberate and free up the whole being. It's a view, and views have a good, solid background with experience that brings them together. Then, here's the kind of critical bit. What would indicate to me as a human being here, as well as Lee Christopher, me as a human being, of holding and clinging around a view which has been consistent through, pretty well through the life? What would show the principle, wise attention, steady with it, not being shaken from it, and essentially staying true to it? What is that, and what is holding and clinging around it? And there is an immense quality of difference between the two. And one of the ways that will immediately show this to us is when you and I have the opportunity to speak, discuss, share our principle or our deeply held view with another or others, and specifically those who have a different kind of view. And to make it even more clear, with the condition of the mind, mind meaning here thought, opinions and views, the clearest signal I can think of at the moment of clinging and holding to a view is the moment you're in an argument. Then you know, oh my God, this is clinging and holding. This is putting down the other, interrupting her or him, speaking louder, speaking faster, unwilling to listen to the other, getting rather upset and intense about it, feeling hurt and wounded with the feedback, leaving with the experience of frustration. It's still going on in the mind long after the communication. You can't sleep at night. Whoa, this is clinging to a view. And the clinging and the relationship to it matters as much as the view. You're sitting in meditation, and this happens regularly enough, something out of the blue we heard this from one of the good people, comes up in the mind. That could be an event involving somebody else, days, weeks, months, years ago. We forget all about mindfulness, calmness, clarity, reduction of stress, wisdom and enlightenment, because we find ourselves pulled into this memory. And with it, the whole meditation is a kind of long internal argument, so to, with this person. We're going over it and over it and over it. It could have happened ages ago. And it shows the glue in our mind at times, the stickiness. And it can stick around for ages and ages. So then the core question, what is going to contribute to dissolving the glue, the stickiness, the holding on to? And sometimes the change can be, we can see it so clearly, the clarity of the seeing stops it straight away. The comparison would be, in the other room there, I have a wood burner. And if one, if a piece of wood, sometimes happens, was still very hot, and the hand touched it, one doesn't think about it. Don't think, well, I think I should be letting this go, or I should drop this because it's burning my fingers. It's an instant response. Ouch. Let go. And sometimes there is enough clarity, this is the power of the human, to see something so clearly in the moment, one knows any holding one is going to burn. Any holding, there's going to be blisters. Any holding is going to take time to heal. So we may have the immediacy. Touch something. Oh, no. Burn. The metaphor works there, but they're also with the view that may not be possible. It's fairly kind of deeply entrenched. We've been putting out this view for years, repeating it to anybody who's got nothing better to do. And then one day we wake up and we've assumed something. It could be about the person we live with. Oh, they'll never leave me. No, we're in it for the long time. I know this person. And this person, he is like this, she is like this. Everything will be all right. We have our arguments, we have our tensions. But they'll be around. This view, it repeats itself. And then one day you come home from work, and the wardrobe is empty. And they've gone. And one's left with a view which was completely out of touch with the person that you lived with, I lived with, who we thought we knew. We thought we knew. This would never happen. They'll never leave me. This is just... Gosh, how many times have I heard that from people? Only actually reason I'm speaking about it now, because I just had a one-to-one with a person just on that. The person could not believe that the partner would walk out and say goodbye and move on to a different. They couldn't believe it. But I've been with this person. I know this person. Oh, no, you didn't. You missed the signals. You held to the view. You were convinced about the view. But the view was in the way of seeing clearly what was happening in terms of the good person in your life. So, to come to the point with you, such views can arise in mindfulness, it can arise in meditation, it can arise in daily life. And our practice is to see the view. Is the view evolving? Are we stuck with the view? Are we clinging to the view? Are we staying steady and true to it, providing it's non-harmful and non-exploitive? And there will be times, part of the guarantee of life, where for all of us, the view will be challenged. It has to be. Sometimes from within and sometimes from without. So to, again, give a current example of this. Just recently, speaking with, communication with friends from the Middle East, in this case, Israel and Palestine, we have some friends, Palestinian friends, who genuinely see that the Dharma can be a really useful way forward, without the word Dharma for the moment, but in terms of the exploration of awareness, mindfulness, non-violent action, communication, cooperation, metta, kindness, generosity, giving, etc. So, one of the Palestinians, very much loved person in the Palestinian community, been having a lot of communication with some Israeli friends, and including the retreats, the dialogues, etc. One Israeli soldier wanted to do the retreat. What does one do in a situation where this is deeply uncomfortable for the Palestinians there because of the occupation, and for the teacher and some Israelis, deeply uncomfortable to say no to a soldier attending? Both have a moral principle. And for those of us who have spent much time with the Palestinians, given workshops and listening to the suffering of the Palestinian community, one can really I can really understand why that principle would be there. And that was an engagement, and that was a lot of dialogue took place. And despite two moral principles, one, let person come, the soldier, and the other, for the Palestinians in Jerusalem, attending that retreat, managing that retreat as well there, for them, they could say it would be much easier if the soldier attended a retreat elsewhere. The moral principle, people have the right with these. the outcome of this exchange wasn't easy. A communication, I was actually involved in it as well, in which the soldier did come. And I said to the teacher, listen to what the Palestinians say. Make sure you find ways to communicate that in one of your talks so that there is a real understanding. In this retreat, there are people with deep moral principles. Clinging to the view, either direction, Israeli or Palestinian, would have brought argument and tension, would never be resolved, and the opportunity would have been missed. And I say exactly the same with this. I may not agree. I may think the political philosophy is too small for me, which I do. But I just had an email from somebody in the street who said, I just received this. I took one look at it. It's only fit to be used for toilet paper. That was the view. I don't have that view. That, in other words, can I listen to a view? Can I find anything in it which has some validity? Can I express my concern? Dharma teachings are about the exploration of the view. With non-clinging, with principle, and being very steadfast. It's easy in a meditation to have a, what should we say, long-winded dialogue with somebody else in one's mind. As I've pointed out for donkey's years, both with myself and with others, we can go along the lines of, I'll say this, and she or he will say that, then I'll say this, and he or she will say that, etc. The great problem with these internal dialogues is, in the real world, the person never keeps to the script. They're completely unfaithful to it. One really thinks, I know what she'll say. I know what he'll say. When she says this and he says that, then I'm going to say this. They go off script. They say something else. And then one doesn't know what to think. So as much as we give mindfulness to the moment, as much as we give mindfulness to the reduction of stress, exploration of physical life, looking at our feelings, in no way are we marginalizing the view. We want to find a freedom, I'm going to use the word again, through an alliance of friendship, through a cooperation with each other, and through inner listening, to find a freedom which confirms and reveals itself through all of these situations. Essentially, it's a freedom from clinging. It's a freedom from a contracted state of being. It's a freedom to stay true to things, such as non-harming. And that willingness will, as I mentioned, at times, place us into a situation where it's going to be challenged and difficult. It has to be. And sometimes I find, perhaps you do as well, entering into a circumstance, it could be a meeting at work, it could be going to see your parents who have absolute views about things, it could be an exchange in with some organization or whatever. And though the feeling inside is, I would rather not have to do this, I would rather not have to go and see these argumentative parents. I'm sure yours are very sweet and lovely, but there are a few around. I would rather not have to go to this political event or this social, etc. So the feeling is a bit unpleasant, is a bit apprehensive, and one would much rather hang out and do something else. But there is another feeling which can come with the view is, let me do this because it's a challenge. Let me do this, go to this, be with her, him, or them, even though there is some resistance, because let me see what the condition is of my being in the face of. And that is really precious. Sometimes you just do it because we want to. For me, say, just give it a few small examples. Well, I'll give one or two that stand out. For years, because I mentioned the Palestinians, would leave Israel, go through the checkpoints, and make my way to Nablus, which is the main town in Palestine. To give workshops, mostly for women who have suffered terribly at the hands of the occupation, and of course sometimes their husbands and brothers and sons and daughters and so forth. So there are periods of time, especially in the Intifada, where it was extremely difficult for anybody to go from Israel into Palestine, from Israel into Nablus, and have to go through all these checkpoints. And there was, you know, there's some danger, obviously, whatever it might be. And sometimes Israeli friends say, don't go, Christopher, it's too risky, nobody's going, which was true there. So I just trust that I can get through these checkpoints with all the interrogating questions going on, etc. And then, having been there, then trust I could get out, and then trust I could get back into Israel, etc. And sometimes one just learns ways and means to navigate through very suspicious officers and soldiers about what one is doing, why one is going there. And one officer said, why are you going into this area with these Arabs, these Palestinians? Why are you going into there? Don't you know there is a war on? And I responded, oh yes, I had heard about it. You know, not to get anxious or worried or whatever. Or the officer came and I had a Samaritan driver, not a Palestinian driver, because he might get arrested, between the checkpoints. And the officer came over and he wanted to show to the young soldiers who are about 20 years of age, 18, 20 years of age. And he started asking all these tough questions, what I was doing there, and did I support Hamas, and all these kind of questions. So I just stood there and he took everything I had and put it through the X-ray machine and he was acting very, very tough, because he wanted to impress his soldiers. There's three of them around. So now I had an idea. He was talking quite fast, and rather aggressively. So I said to him, I appreciate the fact that you're probably still learning English. And do you think you could speak, if you don't mind, a little bit, I am English, but if you could speak a little bit more slowly and just pronounce the words a little bit more clearly, like that. He was embarrassed in front of those three soldiers. 2 minutes later, he said, "It's enough, enough. Okay, you can go through." So sometimes one just thinks around the corner, you know, outside the box a little bit. I was very warm and kind and there, and looked at the three soldiers who were standing there, and they had their rifles there and their stun gun in front of them. There, and just spoke with them like that, and to the officer. And thank you. I said, "Thank you very much, sir, and I'll continue the journey." Like that. So again, small things, sometimes there is a recognition of the what could be a challenging situation, many of them in our life, but we're people of practice. We're people who will go to that meeting, go to that situation, because we want just to, as the Buddha said, test the gold is tested in the fire. And it's not that you and I have to deliberately put ourselves in life-threatening or problematic situations, but we're quietly committed to an engagement with life, and we're not going to be afraid of anything or anyone. I got once to, during these difficult periods with Israel, to the immigration upon arrival at Tel Aviv, in which, frankly, there's hardly any non-Israelis or non-people from the Jewish community going to Israel at the time, because I could see just two or three of us in the foreigners queue some years ago. And the immigration officer in this cubicle took the passport, as they do, looked through it, and he said to me, "And what is the purpose of your visit? There's a war on here." So I smiled and I said, "Well, I come to Israel every year, and I like hummus." And he didn't hear that. He thought I said, "I like coming to Israel every year. I like Hamas." And he went, "What?" In a very strong, "What?" I laughed. "Hamas?" I said, "No, no, hummus." He said, "Oh, okay," and laughed. Stamp, and then I went. Life is just full of the unexpected. Why not? oh dear, yeah. So sometimes, as I say, to repeat a little bit, we are giving care and attention to the whole human experience, and in that, we wish to find a certain freedom to breathe, the freedom to feel this physical life, the freedom to feel, the freedom to work with and watch our mind and our views there. And sometimes all of those events, let's call them, all of those events are not in some moments a priority for us. Mindfulness of the breath is not, mindfulness of the body not, mindfulness of the feeling life, it's not mindfulness of views and thoughts, just not the priority. And it's a huge blessing when they're not. And therefore, we can know a freedom of being which isn't directly involved with breathing, physical feelings, views, the whole, presentation of our person. And that freedom is genuinely precious. It's a kind of liberating freedom in which that world I just referred to, that mindfulness world of objects, is not in any way any need to modify, change, adapt, or whatever. So let's remember in our daily life and in our meditations this wondrous capacity to have a sense of the freedom of being, in which the past is not impacting on us, the present is not impacting upon us, nor is the issues or concerns with regard to the future. And when none of that is impacting, none of it is demanding our attention, there is a freedom of being which has a certain timeless element to it. And the alliance of the practitioners, the sangha of the meditators, may we all have a really deep interest in a timeless freedom. And the receptivity and the sweetness of it contributes enormously to a proper perspective on what was arising, what is arising, and what will or might arise. So we're fully engaged, not totally fully, but with the aspects of time, the way we view the Buddha in the Eightfold Path starts off to confirm the importance, what is called right view. Sammāditti. Literally, sammā means fulfilled. What is a view of life which is fulfilling and steady? And as I mentioned, the engagement with the fields of time and sometimes just the freedom to be. And when sometimes it comes to you spontaneously, just be. No demands on yourself, no expectations on yourself, no wanting anything from yourself, no wanting anything from anybody else. No pressure or demand, just the freedom to be. And just let yourself know and see and know that, well, there's something timeless about it. All right, I'm done. So, let's have a minute or two of silence together. May all beings take a deep interest in the arising of views. May all beings recognize the wisdom that we can find in views. May all beings know and see freedom of being. Thank you very much, everyone.